Happy Thursday and welcome on in to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Cherry.
Yes.
Avi. I don't know if you caught this over the weekend. Maybe folks missed it. But on Sunday, for most of the day, they just closed down a little chunk of Center City to cars. And people were just walking around in the street. And they're doing that every Sunday this month.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a little pilot project. It's an experiment to see how a car-free stretch of Center City functions. Does it attract people downtown? Because mm-hmm. we know downtowns are struggling all across the world post-pandemic. Does it hurt businesses? Does it create log jams elsewhere? Does it help businesses? Does it make traffic better? Who knows, right? They're studying this right now with this pilot program taking place in September. So we're taking the chance to look at this broader idea of pedestrian zones. They're common in other parts of the world. Here in Philadelphia, not so much.
Yeah. I love the idea. I'm a big walker. I love to walk all up and down the city. I think you learn so many things. As a journalist, you get to see what's going on. And so the
idea. You're not in your little glass box.
Exactly.
Sealed from the world.
You're seeing what's happening in your own community. So I kind of like the idea. The question is whether or not our culture, that we're so married to our cars now, would people be okay with that? So, yeah, we're going to ask. We have a big question today.
We do. Could and should Philadelphia create permanent car-free streets or zones? And you know what's not closed, Cherry? Our phone lines. They're open. 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. That's the big conversation today coming up in segments 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
But first, let's get to a trio of local news stories.
Yes, and I get to start with some good news. For once.
Please,
about
start Philadelphia. Us with some good news.
Yes, Philadelphia's poverty rate has had its biggest drop in 10 years.
Hmm.
The U.S. Census Bureau data shows that the rate has dropped more than a full percentage point from 2022 to 2023. This is the steepest decline, okay, that we've had in many years. And it's the steepest decline, I should say, came from children living in poverty. That dropped by 4 percentage points.
Wow.
And you know, Avi, I even said this to you recently. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I dislike is saying that Philadelphia is the poorest of America's top 10 cities. We are still, though, the poorest of the 10
change.
Biggest cities in the country. Houston is a close second, followed by New York. But, you know, we could definitely get out of that
narrowing.
Gap. Yeah.
Yes.
And so how do we see this rate drop? Experts say that it might be because of increased wages. The median income broke $60,000 for the first time since 1979, if you adjust for inflation.
Yeah.
It could also be because, unfortunately, some people have been priced out of Philadelphia. So those living below the poverty line might be moving to the suburbs or other close by cities that may have cheaper housing. As for the number of people living in deep poverty, though, those are the people living 50% below the poverty threshold. That number has stayed the same. So not all good news, but at least some good news, a 1% percentage drop.
Yeah, it's a good example of how, you know, a statistic can be true, but how you interpret it and
yes.
what it means is often confounding. And this is a case here where if it's just people who are living in poverty or leaving Philadelphia to move to suburbs.
That's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what exactly does that say? It doesn't feel like as sunny as of a story, but there does seem to be some movement in this number here in Philadelphia. And I was looking at a chart compiled by the Inquirer. And I have to say, even as someone who was aware of this trend, I was kind of staggered by the size of the jump. Let me lay out this number, 2011. This is, by the way, these numbers mm-hmm. are inflation adjusted.
Yeah,
Cherry.
Inflation adjusted, yeah.
In 2011, okay, median household income in Philadelphia, $46,600. Mm-hmm. Most recently, 2023,
$60,300. Yeah, that's $60,000. That's a big
That's
jump.
Less than 15 years, going from 46 to 60. I don't know if people realize that the arrow was pointing up quite that mm-hmm. steeply in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and we have narrowed the gap between our median household income and the nation's median
yeah.
household income. So again, it's just one of those things to be mm-hmm. aware of. It doesn't necessarily mean it's great, amazing news. Like you can parse it a million different ways, but like we should acknowledge it at the very least, right?
We should acknowledge it, and then hope that one day we don't have to say Philadelphia is the poorest of America's 10 biggest cities. I'm hoping we don't have to, that we're getting to that day.
We still do have to say that there's a large ship parked at a pier in South Philadelphia.
Yes, it is.
Right across from the IKEA. You guys know this ship. It's called the SS United States. It's been there for a long time. And many, many years ago, this was a marvel of modern engineering, the SS United States. It was the fastest ocean liner in the world. It's been sitting in this random pier in South Philadelphia for a long time.
Hard to miss.
And today, it was supposed to be evicted because of this long-running legal dispute between the conservatorship that owns the ship and the people who own this pier in South Philadelphia. They're looking for another extension, and it doesn't seem like it's going to be evicted today because that requires a lot of equipment, but it's still very much up in the air. And today was supposed to be the deadline. So a lot of people who have been paying attention to the saga, the strange saga of this ship in South Philadelphia, are still kind of holding their breath. We don't exactly know what's going to happen. We do know that there is a county in Florida, Okaloosa County, that had proposed taking the ship,
sinking it
in Okaloosa County, so it could be like a reef for divers.
That seems cool.
And so that proposal is floating out there, but the county hasn't really signed off on it yet. And the ship is still here in Philly. So it's a little bit confusing. But today was supposed to be the deadline day.
Yeah, so interesting. I mean, I remember that case. We even had a segment on that.
Yeah.
You know, and the judge says, look, you don't have the right to this pier forever. At a certain point, you're going to have to make some decisions. What's interesting about this story, though, is the Conservancy did not like that reef idea.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to find a short-term home for this ship so that they could possibly have somebody swoop in, give them a whole bunch of money and turn it into, you know, and fix it up, turn it into a mixed-use type of destination that can include a museum.
Yeah, like a tourist attraction.
That hasn't really happened yet. So they're in this limbo space. But we'll see what the judge says. They want till December to give more time. We don't know what's going to happen, but today was D-Day, so we'll see. But it's hard to miss when you're driving up or down Columbus Boulevard. It's just this big looming vessel.
Yeah, it looks kind of like the Titanic or something.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess at this point, it seems like the two most likely outcomes are they reef it or they scrap it for metal.
Yeah.
I kind of like between the two, the reefing, you know, because it still exists in the world.
It's like, how much money would it actually take to repurpose this thing and allow it to be a museum?
And time's running out.
I mean, time is out.
Yeah.
It's almost gone.
And I like the idea of people, it's still existing somewhere in the world and people like swimming around it and fish living in it. And I guess it
that
helps biodiversity.
Really cool. Yeah, that seems really cool.
And I don't dive. I've never dove.
But it seems the idea is cool.
The idea seems cool.
And question for you.
Sure.
Is Pennsylvania the Midwest?
Well, it took a left turn there. So we're off reefs now.
We're off
okay,
reefs.
Okay. Is Pennsylvania the Midwest? No, it's not.
Okay. That's a question. But nearly 1 in 10 Pennsylvanians would disagree with you.
According to who? Who said that?
This is a story that's in the Inquirer. And the Census Bureau has said that the Commonwealth is a mid-Atlantic state. But there's a lot of people. And it depends on where you live in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Whether
well,
or not
I live here, you know that.
Yeah, I'm a mid-Atlantic person.
Yeah, come on.
I'm an East Coast girl. Yeah, come on now. We're Philly.
But
if you're in the middle of the state, if you're towards Pittsburgh, if you're western part of the state, you may feel like your values, like the way you live is more in alignment with people from the Midwest, like in Ohio or something like that.
Right.
And what's very confusing is this, even though the Census Bureau says the Commonwealth is a mid-Atlantic state, the Federal Reserve Bank splits Pennsylvania into different districts and Philly is in the East Coast category, but Pittsburgh is in the Cleveland district. So that's why there's so much confusion.
I'd rather be in the East Coast category than the Cleveland district, personally. Nothing against the good people of Cleveland. Rock
you
and Roll
on
Museum.
Cleveland?
No, I'm not hating on Cleveland.
Okay,
I'm just saying between
sure,
the two. You know, I'm an East Coast guy. We're both East Coast people.
We are. We are.
But I think indisputably we live in the Mid-Atlantic. So I don't see an argument for Pennsylvania being a Midwestern state. I guess you could say it's a Mid-Atlantic state with a Midwestern portion.
Yes.
That's the most
that's
I could
fair.
Give you.
That's a fair assessment, I think, because there is that Midwest. And I mean, and people call Pennsylvania lovingly Pennsyltucky because, you know, Philly has a whole different.
Loving?
I mean, it's a nickname.
No, I know it's out there. I don't know if it's loving. I'm just asking you. Yeah.
But, you know, but it's so different. The state is so big and it's
and
so
I like
different.
That.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, that's why we're a swing state and everybody, and we were the center of the political universe right. this week.
The turnpike runs between the two. You have to drive it. You can't walk it. Mm-hmm. I don't think that would work as a car-free street, but perhaps streets here in Philadelphia would.
Back,
so do
Abby.
You think Philadelphia should have pedestrian-only zones? That's our topic today. Call us 888-477-9499. Very jazzy music here.
I like
you
it.
You can also email us studio2@whyy.org. We will be right back.
Oh, the folks don't stay out very late.
Way out west in Kansas.
Oh, they take the sidewalks in at 8.
Way out west in Kansas.
Oh, it's some town, by heck I'll swear. Say, you can stand in the old town square and knock on every front door there. Yes,
way
sir.
Way out west in Kansas.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Steve. I live in South Philadelphia. There are certainly plenty of other cities that have done this, obviously after European models, but also ones in the U.S. who have done this and also continue to do it because they realize that it's good for the city, it's good for business, it's good for their citizens.
I'm Robert. I moved here from New York a few years ago.
It's really so much fun to walk in. It's
always just better when there's a few less cars to make it even easier.
All right. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. There you heard a montage of voices from Open Streets, West Walnut. For four Sundays, starting last Sunday, the Center City District shut down 18th Street from Locust to Chestnut and Walnut Street from 15th to 19th Streets. It's all a part of a big experiment trying to answer the question, could Center City go car free?
You know, I decided to check it out.
Yeah.
I strolled around Open Streets last Sunday with the family. It was very cool. It was great weather, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I did find myself wondering, Cherry, am I just enjoying the novelty of this? Like I get to walk in the street. Mm-hmm. Or is this really the future of cities? And so that's a question municipalities around the country, around the world have been asking themselves. Should we have more pedestrian zones in our world, in our region, maybe even in some walkable suburbs like a Collingswood, New Jersey, or a Westchester, Pennsylvania? Maybe we could even shut down Philadelphia's Benjamin Franklin Parkway. Let's just get wild, right? So here to discuss all of this, we have a couple of stellar guests. Let me introduce them. First, here to my left, I have Inga Saffron, Inquirer architecture critic. Welcome to the show.
It's nice to be here.
And we also have Katrina Johnston Zimmerman, urban anthropologist and adjunct professor at Drexel University's Westfall College of Media, Arts, and Design. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
But Avi, you know who the real expert is?
Who?
Yes, the people, our listeners. And so we want to hear from you. Should or could Philadelphia create permanent car-free streets? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org.
Actually, let me start with one of our listeners here. This is Chris, who left us a voicemail before the show and wanted to chime in on this idea of car-free streets. Let's hear from Chris.
Hi, my name is Chris. I live in South Philly, and I think Philly should have permanent pedestrian areas. For one thing, they're safer, less cars, and more opportunities to say hello and interact with your fellow neighbors is, you know, I am all on board for.
Okay, so Chris is on board. Mm-hmm. But let's address the skeptics first, Katrina. Because, look, a lot of people love their cars. I get to control the temperature. I get to listen to my music. I like to be able to drive everywhere. It's really convenient. So what's the upside of taking a chunk of a city and closing it off to cars? Why even go through the trouble?
Well, I think your caller actually had it right. And to be honest, all of those wonderful quotes about how fantastic it was and everybody's on board. I mean, I barely even have to say anything else, right? Honestly, I was like, I can just go. That's great. We're done here. No, but in all seriousness, you know, sure, cars seem really convenient as a way to get around. But that's just because it's sort of the system that we have. You know, we are creatures of comfort. We're creatures of, you know, whatever the norm is. We kind of get into the habit, right? So that's what we are as human beings. And it seems more comfortable, but in reality, like, we are very much not made to be moving around a city in a giant metal box, right? So we're actually social creatures. We really get, you know, jazzed by being around mm-hmm. other people. Everybody loves to people watch, right?
We do that love kind to of have thing. Our guests in person yeah. in the studio for
exactly.
that very reason.
Yeah, I can see your face. I can see your emotions. Like, we actually, you know, when we're in a place, we listen to music together, our heartbeats even synchronize. You know, I mean, this is literally what we're built for. When you're behind the windshield of a car, there's even the windshield effect is what they call it. You actually get anxious. You get health problems. You feel like you're different from other people. So anything that we can do to make more face-to-face interactions in our urban environments is going to be better for everyone.
So, but let's talk, you know, everyone wants to do numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Economics. Like, is there an economic argument for closing down streets? Because a lot of people will think, well, it's going to make it harder for buses to get around, and mm-hmm. it's going to, you know, drive away business because people want to drive right up into the parking lot of the Walmart. You know, like, is there a, because we're talking to city leaders here, can we make the case to them, hey, shut down your streets from cars and you're going to benefit?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think you can look to Montreal.
Montreal.
I mean, there are other cities you can look to, but Montreal closed some streets. It's not, you know, full time, but they have seasons and days where they close retail streets, and they have found that there's a significant increase in retail sales on those streets as a result of those closures. And I think you could see that this weekend. A lot of people shopping. Mm. Stores had racks set up outside with sale clothing and other things, and the restaurants were able to have more tables. And I bet at the end of this month-long experiment, if someone, you know, measures it, we'll see increased sales on those blocks. And, you know, people want to, you know, as Katrina was saying, people want to be with other people, especially now when we're not going into the office regularly. We seek out experiential activities where we can be with other people.
I want to play a clip. This is Prima Katari Gupta, CEO of the Center City District. She spoke about the immediate effect of the Open Streets event and the growth potential. Take a listen to what she had to say.
You know, what I was also struck by is my sense, and I, you know, checked in with a couple of retailers on Sansom Street, which was not in the footprint of our activation. And they, you know, they experienced increases in sales volumes. If resources become available and it's proven successful, we might be able to scale.
And so I think about this, Katrina, if immediately one Sunday, the retailers are making more money, what has been the hesitation? Why isn't this just something that we do? What has been holding the city back if it's so clear that this would be a great option?
Yeah, I think the elephant in the room, and Inga, I'm so glad you mentioned Montreal, because folks tend to default to that European thought process, right? And they think, oh, you know, and this is how they do it in Europe, which people love, but then they somehow think we can't do that here. You know, we're not Europe. You know, Philly's not Europe. We can't really handle that, maybe. And there have been failed attempts in the past. You know, there were pedestrian malls all over the place, including here in Philly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, something fails. People think, well, we already tried that. It can't happen again.
Yeah.
And, like, fighting against that cynicism, that's why the data is so important to track, to ensure that we're really, you know, have the proof of concept down and can really, you know, keep moving forward on something with our, you know, full support. But yeah, absolutely. We always see that the economic indicators are higher. People love to be in that kind of a place. They will come there more often, in fact, to have that experience is what it really comes down to. So, you know, there are a lot of different models to explore. And honestly, I just 100% want to shout out Prima's leadership on this for the Center City District because she's doing a great job.
And by the way, Tom mm-hmm. agrees with Inga, says we should be using Montreal's Open Streets
yeah.
program as a model. They close down streets for the whole summer and activate them with cool furniture in places. Is that cool furniture like the furniture is colder because it's hot outside?
Or is it just cool, aesthetically
stylish?
Cool.
I don't know. Tom, I'll have to follow up. So, but let's talk about history, Inga, because Katrina alluded to it. Philly's tried this before in various ways. It hasn't always actually worked out that well. But then there were more recent times like the Pope and the pandemic where people seemed to like it more. So mm-hmm. could you take us through the history a little bit here in Philly?
Sure, Avi. And you're alluding to the infamous Chestnut Street Transitway.
Infamous doesn't yeah. sound good.
Yeah. Well, so I have written about this and I have my own take on it. So I think it was in the 70s, maybe around the time of the Bicentennial,
The city had this very, very forward, progressive idea of turning Chestnut Street into buses only, widening the sidewalk. They put all this cool street furniture, on Chestnut Street. And if you look at the photos, it looks amazing. And they had these kind of futuristic, I think they called them transitron. Lights. Anyway, and we know that the 70s was a really bad time mm-hmm. for Philadelphia. You know, we had the oil crisis. You know, we lost like 150,000 jobs between 1970 and 1980. We lost 13% of our population. It was, you know, the absolute low point for the city. So anyway, they have this transit way. A lot of businesses are still suffering. Businesses close. And they blame the transit way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the economy was in free fall. It was the worst decade in the city's history. And yet the transit way is blamed for the decline of retail on Chestnut Street. And I think that needs to be reevaluated.
And so more recently, because I remember we were here when the Pope came mm-hmm. And they had to shut down mm-hmm. some streets. And then, of course, the pandemic on Sansom Street, they shut down part of that. What are some of the more recent examples of what they've done in Philadelphia? And do we have a sense of, I think work is the wrong word, mm-hmm. but do we have a sense of kind of how it impacted those areas?
So after, you know, the Pope's visit is a really interesting benchmark because, you know, the city had to close a huge portion of Center City for security reasons. And there was a lot of complaining before, you know, how am I going to get there? And anyway, people figured it out. They had buses from Jersey and people mm-hmm. walked. And to everyone's surprise, Center City turned into this incredible playground where people were playing touch football in the middle of the street and kids were doing hopscotch. And it was like a huge celebration, you know, apart from the Pope being here, you know, just people playing.
Yeah.
And so after that happened, it was shortly after Jim Kenney became mayor. He decided to have these open streets days. So they closed North Broad Street from like City Hall to Erie, you know, for big day. That, and they closed mm-hmm. South Street and maybe they closed some others. But then they kind of lost interest in it and they stopped doing it.
Yeah. So it's been a lot of fits and starts. Email from Andrew, who remembers that closing the streets back in the 60s and 70s based on recommendation of some city planner almost killed the business district.
Yes, that Andrew memory still, looms large.
Andrew's still stinging from that. So I want to bring in a caller. We have Bruce from Haverford, who wants to talk about some of the pedestrian-friendly streets. Bruce, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, thanks for having me. Haverford Township. I think that pedestrian-friendly streets are a terrific asset to any city, but with a couple of reservations. Mm-hmm. For those of us who, like myself, are now dependent on appliances like canes to walk around, it's difficult to walk a long distance, and some sort of transportation is very helpful. But I would suggest that we look into the possibility of using trains of golf cart type conveyances that would not be dangerous for people. So people could use the sidewalks, could use the streets if the streets are paved over, but golf cart conveyances in strings would be a terrific way for people who aren't able to walk so much anymore to get around.
That's a great insight.
Thank you so much, Bruce, from Haverford Township.
Yeah. Secondly,
real quick,
there's got to be more convenient and inexpensive parking.
Got it.
Parking is very difficult and very expensive in town, and that's a hindrance.
Thank you so much, Bruce. Bruce from Haverford. I have a follow up to Bruce because I too have parents that are getting older. Accessibility is an issue. Katrina, how do you sort of address that issue when you're trying to sell these car-free zones?
So the beautiful thing about a pedestrian street or a car-free zone or a car light zone or anything like that is really that it's meant to make the space usable for everybody. And we see this in streets across the world. Like, literally any city is going to deal with some kind of accommodation for mm-hmm. folks. It just built into culture better in some other cities, too. So, like, in Denmark, they have, for instance, a huge culture around trikes for adults. So it's a bicycle. If you have mobility and you're able to use that, you know, within that capacity, it's more stable. You can, you know, bring things in the back basket. It has a lot of storage. There's like a sociable aspect again. And so if we can start introducing certain things like that into the culture and accommodate folks, absolutely. In Barcelona, that's my other fantastic example. They have these wonderful super blocks I'd love to dig into, and they basically close super blocks. They got good branding.
Yeah.
So we should call them Philly super blocks. But they closed off the smaller streets in between the larger streets to cars, and they turned them into play spaces and, you know, social spaces, benches, you know, football fields, whatever you want. Literally, they just co-created these little spaces instead of having them primarily for cars, but they still allow for the accessibility. You know, if you do need a vehicle to get around, you can actually get through there specifically. It's just not open to through traffic in the way a normal street would be.
Now, let me read a comment here from Jay, who says, COVID proved we can adapt quickly and successfully to pedestrian-only zones. What happened after COVID proves there's no political will to make those popular changes permanent. That's Jay's comment. I want to ask about another hurdle that's come up. At least I would imagine it's a hurdle, which is delivery. Because more and more people get their goods from places like Amazon, and it requires these vans to constantly be whipping around everywhere. And specifically in a place like Center City, you think about one of those apartment buildings, how many people are ordering from Amazon in one of those buildings every single day? So how do we solve for that when creating pedestrian zones? And Inga, I'll start with you.
Well, I think if you're talking about weekend pedestrian zones, semi-permanent pedestrian zones, you know, most deliveries happen Monday through Friday.
Right.
So that's one option. The city has been talking for years about trying to better organize deliveries. You know, they've talked about having, parking spaces dedicated for deliveries at the corners rather than just, you know, this free-for-all that we have now. But they, you know, for I don't know what reason, they haven't been able to get their arms around this and sort of manage deliveries better. But we can think about it in the larger picture. You know, I hate to bring up Europe.
Okay.
But, you know,
In
those older cities with very narrow streets, you know, they'll have, trike-like delivery vehicles or small electric vehicles. And you know, we should have them too. Like, it's crazy that we're bringing in so many tractor trailers into our, you know, colonial era street grid.
That sounds like force the companies to adapt. Like, if we change it, you can change your delivery models because you still want to get the goods to us.
Right. Yeah. And I noticed that the city has been using these sort of mini garbage trucks, trash trucks lately, and some snow removal stuff. So the city is, you know, managing to do that.
Yeah, and I want to bring in a clip. Our producer, Andreas, went to the first open street day on Sunday. They spoke with Mark, a father who was biking down Walnut Street with his children. Let's take a listen.
No, it's great. I think it should be more often.
More often? So do you think, like, it should happen every weekend?
Yeah, why not? This is great.
What would you say to someone who maybe lives here and says, I have to get groceries and I have to rely on my car?
Be aware that it's coming up and park elsewhere.
All right.
I mean, I live right down the street, and like, yeah, it sucks, but if you live right around here, you're not really driving anywhere, and if you are, you've already planned it out.
All right.
You know, and if you're getting groceries, it's probably Amazon, and they can walk it.
And so, Katrina, that brings me to my question, which is sort of like, how do you decide which streets make, you know, are right for these pedestrian street zones? What are the considerations when you're trying to decide, should it be this street versus that street? Are there infrastructure requirements, store locations? What goes into making that decision?
That's a really great question. I think that the point is that this can happen anywhere in any capacity. We just have to sort out the programming around that, right? So if it's a pedestrian mall that's supposed to be on a major like market street and everyone's going to be shopping, that's got a different format than something, for instance, that's going to be like a play street by a school, right? And, you know, places like Paris are closing down adjacent streets to schools and then allowing for pick up and drop off, you know, a block away, keep the safety levels up and everything. Sociability goes up, you know, provide places for kids to stop and start and everything else. So it's like what the priority is really what we all have to establish collectively in that urban environment in our city here in Philly. But I empathize with that other caller who said, you know, political will has to be there in order to push this forward because, listen, preaching to the choir over here, I wrote a report from Drexel University for the city on how to improve things like parklets at the time, pedestrian plazas, bicycle corrals in our right-of-way, in our streetscape areas. And, you know, I mean, those recommendations are not currently actually being implemented necessarily, though they were basically implemented during the pandemic. And we saw how really wonderful that was for all of us.
Yeah.
Let's bring in another caller now. This is Richie from Port Richmond, who wants to talk about commuters. Richie, you are on Studio 2. What is your question or comment?
I guess it's kind of a question. I hear you referencing a lot of not U.S. cities, and I have moved to urban Philly fairly recently. I noticed that a lot of what you're saying sounds like it hinges on us basically not living in capitalism because the speed with which people need to move and the commuting that happens in and out of the city, the accessibility to enough jobs for the number of people that are in the city versus out, and the qualifications of those that live outside of the city that come in. I have to wonder if making it harder to move, you know, beyond where you can walk is going to really do anything until we can fix something like that. Have you noticed that as cities become, I guess my question is, have you noticed since cities elsewhere become more pedestrian centric, do the jobs start to redistribute amongst the local populace, or how does that work?
That's a great question.
That is.
That's Richie from Port Richmond. And that we're coming up on a break here. We have about a minute, but I do wonder, a lot of people are moving to cities where housing is abundant and cars move quite freely around around the areas. And I do wonder if Philly would suffer a competitive disadvantage if people might say, yeah, I'm going to move down to Dallas. I'm going to move down to Charlotte where I can just drive my car everywhere and the housing is a lot cheaper. What do you think, Inga?
Well, I disagree because, to reference an American city, New York has made incredible strides. You know, they took lanes off of Broadway and turned them into parks. They turned a big section of Times Square into a plaza. They have more than 70 play streets in front of schools. They've accomplished a lot. I think the future for cities is as places where you can have these interactions. And yes, some people will move to those, you know, southern states that you know, where driving is really easy and there's been a lot of job growth. But I think, you know, we're going to see a lot of people moving to places like Philadelphia. And we heard from a couple of callers who recently moved here because this is a place where you can have those kinds of social interactions and walk and
And the jobs will follow.
I'm a believer in that.
All right. So we've got a lot more to get to on this topic.
And our big question for our listeners, should Philadelphia get car-free streets? Or would you like to see more free streets in smaller towns, right? Like Haddonfield, maybe. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And we'll be right back.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Stroll right back on into Studio 2, folks. And park yourself for the last 15 minutes. I'm Avi Wolfman Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are talking about car-free streets with Inga Saffron, Inquirer architecture critic, and Katrina Johnston Zimmerman, urban anthropologist and adjunct professor at Drexel University's Westfall College of Media Arts and Design.
Big question. Should Philadelphia have car-free streets? Maybe you'd like to see them in smaller towns like Phoenixville or Collingswood. We want to hear from you, our local expert. Email us studio2@whyy.org or call 888-477-9499.
And I want to play this clip. Again, we spoke with Prima Katari Gupta, CEO of the Center City District, and here she's talking about how her office, the Center City District, has done some research and compared Philly to other parts of the country. Take a listen.
You know, this is by no means a novel idea. This is something that we are seeing in a lot of downtown high streets around the country. And, you know, if anything, Philadelphia might be a little bit behind. But I think a lot of these places where there are a lot of retailers have realized that, you know, pedestrianization is great business. For example, Boston, Newbury Street, got all these great new digitally native brands. Newbury Street does this for 12 Sundays a year.
And so, Katrina, I have this question for you, because how did other cities, and I'm thinking about Amsterdam specifically, a city that was very car friendly, sort of make the shift? Because when I went to Amsterdam, everybody was riding around on a bike and had the little bell, and it was very fresh air. Like, how did they make that shift? How did they get them to go there? Because clearly, you know, we hear from Gupta here, this it seems to be working here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, the wonderful thing about humans is we're so adaptable, but sometimes it means, you know, we just get so accustomed to a norm that we just think it has always been that way. We wake up and we're like, cars are everywhere. I mean, it's the same as going to Amsterdam. You go, wow, these people bike. They must just really be good at biking, some sort of like natural instinct by the population. No, it used to just be like any other normal city as we see it today, normal in the United States. They had cars everywhere. People were parking in plazas. I mean, absolutely. So they had a lot of protests, specifically around the death of children via car crashes or Kindermord in a sort of English parlance there. But the protests led to changes in the urban environment and the design, and then more cultural programs allowed for people to get used to and be given bicycles to get around instead. And so then, literally over the course of a few decades, the culture has changed, thanks to the design and the programs, to now be the dominant way that the Dutch are seen in the world. And that's literally just how they live. They wake up, they see bikes, they get on a bike, and they get around the city.
Alex would like to see Sansom pedestrianized, because Alex points out it was, during COVID, part of it in Center City. And Alex says it's ridiculous they reverted it. It's not a major thoroughfare, and it's blocked for construction often anyways.
All the time, yeah.
So that's Alex's point of view. Let me bring in a caller now. This is Meg from South Philly, my neck of the woods. Meg, you are on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, I just wanted to say I think that there's an enormous opportunity to promote open streets program and also reinvigorate SEPTA at the same time. Right now we have a north-south and an east-west artery with the Broad Street Line and the Market Frankfurt. Why not add two more spokes into that wheel so that people can access the other like parts of the city, northeast to southwest and northwest to South Philly, so that we don't need to have as many cars?
That's a great point, Meg. And I actually want to redirect that now to Inga Saffron, Inquirer architecture critic, because it does seem like you couldn't just close off streets and just keep everything else the same, because the rest of our environment isn't necessarily built for that. It's been retrofitted for cars in many ways. So what types of changes would need to happen in tandem with something like pedestrianizing? I hate that word, pedestrianizing or whatever, a part of Philadelphia. What other changes would need to happen in tandem?
So most of what we've been talking about are occasional closures,
right,
either on weekends or seasonally. You know, it's pretty – I mean, there certainly are streets that could be closed permanently, not just in Center City, but in the neighborhoods, right? You know, when someone saw the tweet you put out about this program earlier today, they said close Chester Avenue in Clark Park.
Right, mm-hmm.
Which
right.
Cuts
West
that park,
Philly. Yeah, yeah.
Cuts that park in half, and that's a brilliant idea. So there are a lot of streets around the city that could be closed permanently, but then there are other streets like the ones that were closed this weekend where, you know, you wouldn't want them closed permanently because of, you know, those stores do need deliveries, people who have mobility issues need to do errands. But to your point, of course we should have better transit. You know, climate change is bearing down on us, and, you know, one way to deal with that is to take buses and subways and trains and trolleys. And people in Philly resist that because, you know, they don't run frequently enough.
Mm.
And, you know, it's a very chicken and egg thing. SEPTA is terribly underfunded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're even talking about getting rid of the Chestnut Hill West line right now. It's crazy to be reducing the network when we should be talking about increasing the network. And, you know, we could have, and SEPTA is trying to do that now with the changes they've made in the bus routes for the bus revolution. And that, you know, could be a really great thing if we have more frequent buses, gets you to the downtown, gets you to the places where the streets are closed. You know, why does Europe have more successful pedestrian zones? Because they have better transit.
Right. Yeah. It's a chicken and egg. Yeah. It's a great way to put it. Yeah.
And if you're just tuning in, we're asking the question today, should Philadelphia get permanent car-free streets, or would you like to see more car-free streets in smaller towns around our area? Give us a call. The number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. I want to bring in another caller, Cheryl from media. She says her town does it. Cheryl, you're on Studio 2. What's your comment or question?
Hi there. Yeah. Here in media, just a stone's throw from downtown, we've got Media Under the Stars every Wednesday night. The State Street is closed off. That's the main road here, you know, so it's closed off downtown. The restaurants bring tables out into the street. There are so many families, and it's just a lovely, lovely feeling. And I would like to say, too, they do it year-round. I love it in the wintertime when it's really, really chilly. They'll have an ice sculpture display all along.
That sounds so nice.
All along the street. It's lovely. It's really lovely. In fact, last year they had a piano, an 80-grand piano made out of ice.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Hard to tune that thing, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. That's Cheryl from Media.
We got to go. It's Wednesday nights in
Wednesday
Media.
Wednesday nights. I love it.
Wednesday nights. Come on out.
All right. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you, Cheryl. And Katrina, that goes to my question. I mean, we talked about the political will. Inga mentioned all the issues we have. Our transit system has all these financial problems, right? It needs to be shored up. What type of public policies need to be put in place so that we can think about this even a few years from now, if not now, as we try to move towards more car-free streets?
So the wonderful thing about the world that we live in is that everything was designed, mm-hmm. which means that everything can be designed differently,
yeah.
right? So there's always a solution to any of those sticking points, any of the barriers to entry, any of those, you know, problems that people see as a possible problem anyway. There's always a solution. It's just a question of how. As long as you know the direction that you're trying to get into, like, this is a goal.
But it's a
this
question
is
of money,
we
too,
work
right?
To.
I mean, it's investment.
Is. But the money can also be put towards what your investment is.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
right, you know, you put your money where your mouth is. So whatever that priority is, things can be adjusted around that. And we can prioritize transit. We can do more subsidies. We can work to continue, you know, making it a more holistic network. And then you can do demonstration projects like we did. I mean, that's it's a fairly inexpensive, you know, thing to do, actually, to close the street for a day for a few hours to try it out. So you can do an iterative process, too, and kind of learn from it and adjust as you go. And then you can put in place permanent policy changes that actually allow for that to happen all the time. And then we can go from there. It's really it's honestly, we know what works, and it's really not as hard as some people think it is.
Well, here's an email from Ned, who's a bit of a skeptic, I think. Ned says, it's all well and good to have pedestrian spaces. What about the people who live on those streets, who pay property taxes and need to park their cars when returning from work or just coming home from wherever? That's Ned's thought. And it leads me to this thought. In my mind, at least the way I think about it, Philadelphia is a really old city, right? It predates cars. But over the last, let's say, about 100 years, a city like this one has been retrofitted to make sort of car access possible. Is the challenge of the next 100 years now basically undoing that? So like Ned's expectation at some point in the future is sort of null and void that, you know, everyone can kind of park on their own street? I mean, is that really the direction we're heading, kind of undoing everything we just did, Inga?
You know, again, you know, we're not talking about closing. I mean, we're talking about closing a few streets permanently, but we're not talking.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about like occasional closures. And I would just point out to Ned, there are plenty of streets where you can't park, where there's no if they're too narrow or they don't have parking. So it's not a God-given right to park in front of your house, even though some Philadelphians do think it is.
That'd be a tough sell in my neighborhood.
I know. But right. it's people have to change their expectations. We this is not a suburb where people have big driveways, although, you know, some people have garages, it's true, in their house. But, you know, we choose to live this way because there are other benefits. And we choose to make these sacrifices because, you know, I think the quality of life is better. Mm-hmm. We're healthier because we walk and bike. We have more social interactions. During the pandemic, all my neighbors, you know, sat on their steps, and we had a quarantini. We had quarantinis, martinis on our.
We'll have to get the recipe for that after the show.
We had our socially distanced martinis. You know, that can only happen when you live in houses that are 16 feet wide.
Yeah. I got to read this email from Patrick, who says, go big or go home. Why not ban private cars from all of Center City?
Whoa.
We could become a real leader on climate, public health, urban planning. Interested to learn if anyone has proposed such a bolder option.
Okay, Katrina, tackle that. And you can, I know you had a comment on the last question too, but I mean, is that like where we're headed? That's kind of my question, right?
That's
like,
are we
going to that direction where we kind of just say like cities are primarily not spaces for cars? Is that where we need to get to?
That is where we need to get to. And, you know, again, people will do what they're able to do, right? And so, again, if you have a parking space in front of your house or a garage or a dedicated spot, you will, and you're able to afford a car and it's, you know, seems to be easier for you to do that, you're going to do that. But we have to be putting those incentives in place to allow people to have other alternatives in order to move us away from that direction. Because, unfortunately, the last 100 years, in a lot of different ways, did not do us any good as human beings. I mean, we want to talk about the ways in which changing streets and taking cars off of them improves lives and, you know, improves economic indicators and everything else, but it also improves equity. I mean, there are communities, entire communities, that were cut off because highways separated them from the center city. They destroyed houses. I mean, families and communities that were embedded. Asthma rates are higher around highways, and that tends to be communities of color. I mean, if we want to actually talk about this conversation, a city is a community. And yeah, it involves some compromise, but in reality, this is actually better for everyone because the communal health will impact everyone else and make it a better city overall.
Yeah. Inga, do you have anything to add to that about
you
the
know,
big
aspirationally, yeah. I agree. I think logistically, you know, we would have to change a lot of things. So I'm more of an incrementalist. I would
You're
say.
You're like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, let's start small and work out the kinks and work our way up to, you know, permanent street closures in Center City.
even the much maligned Chestnut Street transitway did allow cars at night, I think after six or whatever. So, you know, I think what we're calling for is more of a balance. You know, we've overprivileged the cars. You know, we want to reset that. We want to reset the balance and, you know, give pedestrians and cyclists and everyone else, you know, more safety, more freedom, more opportunity to enjoy the city.
Yeah. And Kay Flagg on X said, yes, we should have more permanent car-free streets because car-free streets are safer and more accessible and allow for more dynamic retail economics. Email from Aaron who says, I support pedestrian streets so people can enjoy the city without the danger and noise of automobiles. So how far do you think we're away from moving towards this vision? Because I know Avi would like this. How far are we away? Like, do you think this is something that could happen in the next 5 to 10? Or are we sort of a lot farther away from that, Katrina?
I mean, technically speaking, a street could be closed tomorrow, right? So those are the kinds of quick changes that can happen. But to Inga's point, obviously, it is an iterative process. So we have to make sure that we get all of the indicators in line, get all that data, double, triple check everything, work out some logistics. We will have to work out, you know, logistics with companies and things, like you said, private companies around like deliveries and whatever have you. So that will take time, but time is also ticking, you know? I mean, and also you can see the cultural change. I mean, I'm going to be totally honest. The amount of positivity coming from the audience members on this show is just making my heart sing because it has taken a long time to get to this point to have
just
people,
are
such
open
support.
To that. And 100%. Totally.
Yes.
So change has been made. And there you heard it from Katrina Johnson Zimmerman, urban anthropologist and adjunct professor at Drexel. We also heard this hour from Inga Saffron, Inquirer architecture critic. Thanks to you both for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me.
And by the way, Alina in Westchester shouts out, because we mentioned Westchester. She says they do have some street closures in Westchester, and she loves it. So
I love
shout
it.
Shout out Westchester.
I love it. So, and that's it for Studio 2 today. The show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray-Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Al Banks engineered today's show. Joan Isabella is the general manager of audio. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philly, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi. Talk to you next week.